cliffcentral.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. It's Frankly Speaking for 1 hour, and we are together.
Finally.
Well, yo, I'm bringing back the 90s, early 90s. Eh? It's been a while.
It has. How you been doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Busy. I've missed you.
Oh.
No, but I mean that really. I've missed you. When I was away, you were here. Then I was here, and then you went away.
Mm.
And now we finally connect.
Finally. Ebony and Ivory.
I don't know what's worse, that song or you singing that song. It's a worry for me. Eh? What do we got today? What are we talking
about?
Hey,
so Frankly Speaking continues. Today we thought, you know what? We're both 80s babies, and I think 80s babies are going through a bit of a, you know, our producer Bulla, who's a 90s or maybe a 2000s baby, is looking at us like old people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it seems like the 90s babies with Fees Must Fall have found their voice and have found a way to put their mark on South Africa's political history. The question is, us 80s babies, how do we make our mark on South Africa's political history? So today we're asking, Frankly Speaking, how do 80s babies make their mark on South Africa's political history? So we have the generations that came before us, and obviously they fought apartheid, and they did what they did to secure the freedom that we have. And then we inherited it as 80s babies. I don't know if we were maybe just a little bit too young, but it seems like we might go down.
We missed the boat, huh?
We might go down as non-entities in South Africa's political history. What did we achieve?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, let's just talk age groups here. 80s is anywhere from 36 to 27.
Yeah.
So that's a range.
Give me one person in that group who we can say that person defines our mark on South Africa's political history.
Julius Malema.
No, Julius is 50. Well, how old is Julius?
What do you mean he's 50? He's not 50.
But he's an individual.
He's 35.
Well, he's an individual, but he hasn't. It's not a generational thing. So yes, we've got amazing individuals, but they have not really been part of, in my view, a generational movement. So the individuals that we're speaking about now in the 90s, when we speak about Shahira Kala, for example, who is one of the leaders of Fees Must Fall, she is part of a generational movement, right? But when you speak about Julius Malema, what has been the generational movement that he has led? It doesn't feel quite. And maybe we're being too generous when we say generational movement, because Fees Must Fall might be led by the people of that generation, but is it really a generational movement? Is it something that entire generation is fighting for?
Well, remember when we spoke to those students on that student show, and it was interesting because a large part of the students came from UCT, and they just were nowhere. Do you remember?
Mm.
Those guys, I think it was about white students or something like that.
Mm, mm.
And they were not interested in the movement at all. They were totally apathetic.
Well, they didn't know how to position themselves within the movement, because there's like, we get involved and we get told that it's not our struggle. We don't get involved and we get told that we're on the sidelines. We don't know where to stand. So yes, there's certainly, you can't say it's all of the 90s babies that are involved, but it is something that has that will go down in history. This generation's efforts will go down in South Africa's political history. The question is, our generation, the 80s, what will be our mark on South Africa's political history? What will history look back at and say, you know what, that generation, this is the mark that they made? And that's why a conversation like this is important, because most of us are increasingly sitting in positions of power. We can influence what happens in this country. But without a clear sense of what our role is or the role that we should be playing, I think we can find ourselves being ineffective and actually not making an impact on this country.
And we obviously want your thoughts as well. So hit us up on Twitter at Rory Shabalala or at Yebo underscore Levy, as well as WeChat, cliffcentral.com. Who we got on the show today? What's the story? Who's going to be answering this question?
Hey, so there's a lot of people, but we thought today we're going to get the DA's Shadow Minister of Human Settlement, Mr. Makashule Gana, or the Honorable Makashule Gana. He is a Member of Parliament. He is an 80s baby, born in 83, I believe, has been through the DA structure, started his political life in SASCO at the University of the North, which is now the University of Limpopo, and has basically worked his way. He was once the Deputy Federal Chairperson of the DA. He has been the DA Youth Leader. So this person has certainly given his life to participating in South African politics. So if there's anyone who can help us to maybe explore and unpack this question, it is him.
You're saying he's a symbol of what could have been the 80s baby's paths?
Well, he has certainly gone into politics. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can tell us what he sees his role as an 80s baby. As in South African politics, and what our role should be. We are now mostly young professionals and so on. So most of the listeners and so on of the show would be young professionals, beginning with starting families and all that sort of thing. So what should our role be?
We've got a lot to lose.
Or are we done? Did we miss the boat and we're just done? We should just sit back, make babies, grow our stomachs and just get on with it and allow the next generations to pick up after us, because we basically made a mess of it. This generation would not have to be fighting Fees Must Fall if we had fought it.
Don't you think that there was a bit of a calm after the storm in a way, Rory? And we got caught right in the middle of that. So this idea of... apartheid ended, democracy came. We were, '80s babies. You know, some of them were incredibly young. Some of them were just into teenager space, and there was this kind of calm before the storm, or calm after the storm, and we kind of got rambled up in that. And then, as soon as we got older, the storm started again. But by that time, we had a lot to lose.
Yeah, for whatever reason, the reasons and results, and the results are that we sat on our bums. And history just passed us by.
Have we sat on our bums?
We are the inconsequential generation of South Africa. It won't matter whether we showed up or didn't show up, because we just won't feature.
All right, let's get Makashule Gana on the line. He's traveling all over the place.
Yeah, I think he's around. I think he's in this beautiful province of ours, Gauteng. Good morning, Makashule.
Good morning, Rory and Andrew. How are you guys?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic, Honorable Minister, Honorable MP, sorry. So you were obviously not in Parliament yesterday. It's almost similar to us as 80s babies not being in the political landscape or in the political history. And we thought we should speak to somebody who has devoted his entire life to politics, as to what is the role of 80s babies in South Africa's political history, or are we just doomed to be an inconsequential generation? But before we get into that, Makashule, maybe let's get into your and I know you go rather by Ghana mostly, so we're gonna just shift to Ghana.
Why is that a DA thing?
No, it's a surname.
No, it's not a DA thing, Andrew. It's,
because no one can pronounce Makashule, is that it?
No, people can, but I think they have very few people who are called Ghana out there. When you say Makashule, people might think I'm related to the to the Black Jesus of the Free State. So I
Ace Makashule.
that guy has been the long-standing chairperson there before democracy.
You see, you're out of line. We said we were not gonna go there, but you see what you're doing.
You see why I don't want to use Makashule a lot.
Point taken. Ghana, you went into politics very early, and you've devoted your life to politics as an 80s baby. What did you see at the beginning as your role in politics, and what were you trying to achieve?
Thanks, man. When I went into politics, started with student politics. More it was the excitement, what was happening in the country, and wanting to contribute, having missed the struggle itself. You know, so I was not born, or I was too young when many young people went to exile and they were fighting the apartheid system. So I define my role as to strengthen democracy and making sure that the democracy that we have does work for everyone. You know, that many people do get to enjoy the fruits of our freedom. So I then joined politics, and I saw my a role in politics for me. And that for me that was the reason that I went into politics, and obviously exploring different things, you know, as a student, and then also when I started working.
Gardner, you obviously you have a BSc where you've majored in mathematics and so on. So you are not naturally, let's say, molded for politics. So it's quite an interesting decision that you would then, out of that, decide that this is the journey you're going to take. You're going to take politics when you could have been any, you know, could have been an engineer and so on. What take us back to that moment. So you speak like a well-trained politician in terms of what was happening in the country, macro issues. But as a young person, you know, there were a lot of things that just pertained to you and your lived experience at that time in your environment. What was going on in your life that led you to say, you know what, out of all the different options I have, politics is where I want to be?
Initially, politics was just a hobby, something I was interested in to understand what was happening in the country. I mean, growing up in a village in a former homeland, my interest actually started with when Mandela was released, and there was a lot of unrest in the former homelands. Mm. And my uncle was an activist, and he remains an activist of the ANC. So from that moment on, I started asking questions on what this ANC is, what is it all about, and so forth. And I took politics more as a hobby rather than something that I would get into fully, you know, and be a full-time politician. But as time goes on, I got so much involved in it that it just became something that I wanted to do, you know, and I wanted to serve my country as a politician, and because I believe that South Africa needs a different kind of a politician, and if I can't have that person in the meantime, whilst I'm searching for this kind of people to come into the political space, I need to be holding the fort, you know. And as soon as we get those right kind of politicians, some of us who are not that much talented in politics will step back, you know.
You can resign, huh?
Said like a true politician.
I will step back.
Was it not you guys that were telling Jackson Tembu to lead by example and resign? Maybe it would be interesting to see whether you will definitely step back when the time comes.
You know, Rory, I always tell people that I'm probably one of the least talented politicians that we have in this country. Mm. Once we find these talented politicians, people like us need to step back, you know, need to create space for those that have the talent, and we'll just support them. I never saw myself as one of the talented political players, you know.
Is that maybe, are you beginning to touch on maybe what our role as the 80s babies is in the political landscape? And I want to get into this maybe later on, but just to park a thought for all of us, is maybe our role is really not to be the big champions in political history, but to be stepping stones and to maybe support those that will now take us into the next era of our political existence. Just a thought. Maybe let's park it
I have an interesting response to that question. I think you might have misunderstood what I said.
Okay, go on. Maybe clarify. Clarify. If you are not a talented politician, I was certainly less talented than you. That's why I failed at it. So,
no, so you're probably more talented than me.
Not
but
a chance.
You see, I try to acknowledge my lack of talent by I supplement it by the passion and the hard work that I put in. Mm. My take is, especially our generation, I think one of the most frustrating things that I see is that many of us, especially the what I consider the top 2-3% of South Africa, the middle class, we are actually withdrawing from the political discourse. Mm. Our only involvement is around Twitter. We write letters. We call radio shows, and we think we are contributing. And my take is that actually we must get into the forefront of leading the political change and get the right leaders that the country, we believe the country deserves. Because if you ask anyone, you to say, do you believe that the kind of leaders we have in South Africa now are the right kind of leaders to take South Africa to the next level? 8 out of 10 will say no. But then what are you doing about it? The 80s baby, as you call us, we are in our 30s now, going into the 40s. Are we stepping up, or we withdrawing and we are enjoying the comfort of our debt? I call it the comfort of our debt, because we are living on debt. The middle class is living on debt. And we are trying to protect the access to debt that we have acquired as a result of our economic state. Yeah. We're not owning any means of production, so we are just consuming, and we're using debt to consume in many instances. So we're trying to protect this access to debt that we have earned, and we are leaving those that are least talented, like myself, to be in politics and leading political organizations that I believe many more young people should get in. The right kind of young people should get into politics.
Makashule, I'm interested to hear what you think about how this would happen, because I think there's a lot of young people at the moment who are asking the big questions of what is my place in South Africa right now. And, you know, I suppose, as you've mentioned, there's a debt growing community here, as well as a responsibility growing community. You know, a lot of these guys and girls are having babies right now. They're starting families, and suddenly it becomes quite, you know, from the days of when you were a student and everything was gung-ho and the South Africa that we want to build to, hey man, I just want to live my life, and the little family that I create, that's what I want to build. Because all this, you know, you see Zuma headlines all the time, you see all this corruption all the time, and you're just like, well, what the hell am I going to do about it? How do you propose people that are leaders or not even leaders, good followers, how do they get into the system besides buying a card for 50 rand a year?
You know, I think one, you need to move from the point that says, seeing those headlines of Zuma, the corruption, one minister doing that, and so forth, should actually make people to get involved rather than to retreat into their safe spaces. Because let's face it, there's no sector of society that's going to prosper if we get our politics wrong. If we get the politics wrong, that townhouse that you bought through a loan from FNB or ABSA will be worthless.
How do you know my personal things?
that's the truth of it. So many the failure of many nations, it's as a result of political leadership, because whether we like it or not, political authority will remain with us, and we get that wrong. So we get the wrong kind of politicians to lead the country. Then we will all the things that we at the moment we think we have, like our savings, our investments, and so forth. Like we have seen last year, over 2-3 days, what happened to the investment. And the most people that carry the brunt of this thing, it's the middle class, the one that I'm saying they are withdrawing the most. When there's something wrong with the economy, we stand to lose the most. So we should be actually at the forefront of changing the political landscape. And how do we get involved? We have choices, you know. Obviously, the one that I like is that you join the organizations that are working towards creating this kind of a South African political leader. And if you believe, or a group of you believe, that none of the political parties that are there actually serve you, our constitution allows for you, you know, everyone has got the right to be voted for, and you can form an organization that will represent your views. So
I'm interested.
The truth of the matter is that you cannot change the political players unless you get into politics. You see, there's no Superman here that's going to change the political leadership of this country. We are the Superman we have been waiting for.
So no one Sunil just say things so nicely.
That's a quote. You are the Superman you've been waiting for.
I'm interested to hear, Mr. Garner, about your political school that you've brought, I think, within the DA. Do you think that 80s babies are politically illiterate? Do you think that they just don't know what good looks like?
No, I don't think we are politically illiterate. I just believe that many people are scared to get into the political arena because they see politics as a dog eat dog kind of an environment.
I've been there, and you know it is definitely that, is it not?
No. I'm still here.
No, you're there because you're
waiting to retire.
No, you're strong. You're a strong person, but it does not necessarily mean that it is not that environment, right?
No. We don't wake up and try to eat each other up. We try, at least some of us. At least some of us. I can't speak for everyone. Those that I work with, we try to work on this. The political school, basically, for me, I call it, it's a platform for political conversations. You know, so it's a platform where people come together and they share their knowledge and experiences on politics, and you get to discuss whatever is happening in society, and how we should respond to that. So, I think. Social media has created the platform for people to interact on politics, and they do that. But unfortunately, we don't get to take it to the next level. I'm not one to believe that your role as a citizen or to strengthen democracy should be limited to voting, because there's an aspect that people hardly look at, and that's to be voted for. So people are, yes, we want people to vote, but the where we are now in this country, we need more people, especially from the middle class, to come in and be willing to be voted for into political office. That's my take on this bet.
Now, if you think that we are literate as 80s babies in the political atmosphere and society, why did we need a political school to be built?
As I said, the political school is a platform. It's a platform to exchange ideas. We do need platforms to exchange ideas. Because we need to learn from one another. My experience of South Africa and your experience of South Africa are different, mm-hmm. You know, and how we then get to create a South Africa of our desire is when we bring our experiences together and say, how do we then move forward together? Because this thing, where we are, it needs all of us. You know, it's not whether this guy will come with the best solutions. It needs all of us, and we must use the experiences of people staying in the rural areas, people in informal settlements, the townships, those that are renting townhouses in Sandton or the northern suburbs. We need to come together and say, these are our experiences. This is how we see things, and this is how together we should be moving forward. That's what the political school is. It's just a platform. I don't teach politics. As Rory said, I'm a graduate of mathematics and computer science. I didn't graduate in politics, so I don't teach politics. Mm. I just create a platform for people to discuss politics, and then using my experience, because every day I experience politics, then I'm able to guide in terms of how I see things.
Ghana, we saw recently, when was it? A day or two ago, the CEO of the Black Business Council, Mahale Ralibitso, resigning. But word on the street is that he was pushed for raising support for Pravin Gordhan. So as much as people who are already in politics, who have that political cover, can happily go in and say, yes, let's get involved, it seems like there's just a lot of risk. And for us 80s babies who are beginning to establish families and careers and so on, there's a lot that seems to be on the line. How do we? So yes, we speak of, you know, you say we're politically literate. You say that these platforms where we get to exchange ideas, but we can speak forever. Taking action like endorsing Pravin Gordhan or taking more substantive action requires almost putting your neck out. And it seems like the chances of your neck getting cut off for getting involved are a lot higher than you simply making your mark and moving forward. So how do we deal with that? You are also a young professional in many ways, but yeah. you are mm-hmm. in that space. You are expected to do that. But what about the rest of us? How do 80s babies participate when we've got so much at stake on a personal level?
Look at it this way, Rory. What is the cost of you not being involved?
Well, I've got a
different story. I want to ask this question as well. I'm very interested in
it. No, I've got a different story.
Let's talk about this. No, we must bring this up here. This is a good question.
So if things continue going down as they are, you see those things that you are thinking they are so precious, ne?
Yeah.
You are not willing to risk, you know, that medical aid. You know, that ADT alarm, that electric fence.
Yeah.
Ask yourself this question. If we continue to go down at the rate that we are going down, and you are not coming in to try to stop the decline, in 2 years' time, those things, you will not have them anyway.
Mm.
So for in fact, actually, to protect what you have now, the only option for you is to get in and stop the rot.
But Ghana, we've been doing...
Sitting on the sidelines is not an option.
But you and I have done this before, and it seems this message hasn't landed. This is a message that I used to also say, but it's not landing. We are not seeing 80s babies being woken up from this. It's almost like we don't expect it to really happen. So why is this message then not landing? That, look, if you don't, you know, it's not in our best interest for any government to fail in South Africa. We need to get involved in politics. All of those things are things that I agree with you. I was there myself, but it's not landing. Our peers are not standing up. They're not getting involved. So why is it not landing?
Maybe things must get worse before they get better, so that people know that this thing is real. You see, Zimbabwe didn't get where it is overnight. So people think what happened in Zimbabwe or what happened in Zambia or what happened in other countries will not happen to this country. They think no, those people just had God was not on their side, or the
or it wasn't all of a sudden. It was an all of a sudden thing. Yeah.
You see, Zimbabwe got its way it is now because of leadership. Because people were enjoying the fruits of independence, they overindulged. on the fruits of independence, and they took their eyes off the ball. Those people that know we are trying, we want to get involved now. We're trying to build our families. You know, I want to make sure that my kid will go to the university and so forth. When Mugabe was done with his thing, there was no university to go to. those little savings that you had were worthless. Because that's what it is. You know, like when a country start printing a trillion dollar note, and you're saving, Rory, you're saving at the moment, or your investment don't even get to a million, for example, or maybe they get to 10 million. But the lowest note is a trillion rand. So your entire investment cannot even be printed in a note.
Well, if you just joined us, we're speaking about how do 80s babies make their mark, and we've got Shadow Minister for the DA Human Settlements, Magashule Ghana, talking to us now. Mr. Ghana, I want to make this a bit more personal for Rory, because he was in politics, and
he ran away.
I think he did a fantastic job. I was very close to him at this time.
You mean he did a fantastic job of running?
Now, why are you being like that? Why? We'll get to you. Just relax. No, we'll get to you. Hold on.
You are the one that started this. Why are you trying to make as if you're innocent?
Mr. Ghana, I want to know, guys who have been in politics, right? Guys who like Rory, are an 80s baby and actually did get involved, actually saw the risk and thought, flippin' hell, I want to get involved, did get involved, and then retired, resigned, got fed up. What did you say to guys like this? Because the Rorys of this world, and I'm using you as an example because you actually did it, you actually stood up when others sat down like me, these guys are totally over it. They're like, they don't see the role of politics being important. Rather, potentially, the role of building wealth is important, that will then create power, which will then create influence. What do you say to a guy like Rory, who's been there, who's done that, been disillusioned, got out, and now sits on the sidelines as this incredible intellectual, incredible leader, and doesn't get involved in politics?
Actually, I don't believe that Rory is out of politics.
Oh, he's the third force, isn't he? He might
be outside that failed venture, but in him, remember, politics is not only what you do, it's how you live your life, the questions that you ask yourself on a daily basis. In what he's trying to do now, it's actually to get back into the political space. Maybe not him personally, but I can tell you now, without having spoken to him, just observing and listening, that he's trying to get other people back into politics, because he understands his wealth creation ventures are directly linked to the political environment of this country. You cannot divorce the economy and the politics of this country. That's why in his spare time, he will try to encourage other people to get into politics, and he will be a political player in the economic side.
Mr. Shabalala, you have 2 minutes to respond.
No, so I think Ghana's right.
Please tell me I'm wrong in my observation.
No, listen, comrade. We are not in parliament. I'm not going to be channeled, as politicians say.
I'm not channeling you. Yeah, I made an observation. You can say no, Ghana. You are looking at the wrong thing.
No, so you're right. I think it's not a departure from politics. Once you've been in, you realize that there are a number of different ways of participating in politics, and you assess your strengths. You assess what platforms are out there, and you look and say, okay, what's the best way for me to play my role within politics? Party politics forms a small part of a broader political environment. So yes, I don't think you leave politics, but it certainly does get frustrating. You know, party politics can be very frustrating, and I think it requires a certain type of a person to be in party politics. And then it requires, you know, party politics does not exist without the support of other people in the political landscape that are ensuring that political ideals are achieved. So we are all ultimately political. Those of us that try to imagine that we're not are actually liars. That's me. So the question...
But I think where an aspect, I think, where we're trying to get to is how do we get people into party politics? Because we want right kind of leaders in parliament, one right kind of leaders in the legislatures and municipalities. Because if all of us we look and say, no, my role is just support. My role is to write on Twitter. My role is now. Whose role is it to be in parliament?
Yours. It's your role, and we can't all be in parliament. There are a finite number of seats. So our role is to strengthen your seat in parliament. No,
we can't all be there. But I'm saying I'm not convinced that in parliament we have the best of the best.
No, that's true. So let's then ask Ghana, how then should we be participating in party politics? It, for a person who's never been close to that, it can seem very intimidating. You get told of brunch meetings and so on and so on. 80s babies. We have full-time jobs. We want to get involved. So ultimately, we end up just painting schools and donating blankets as the best that we feel we can provide. When there's so much more, as you say, within party politics that we can do. How do we get involved in party politics?
I think one way it's to understand, and that's where. I'm trying to get to, you know, is to say, you know, there are young people that should be contributing ideas to party politics, and they are happy to talk ideas. They might not like this thing of standing on the street corner like you used to do, you know, handing out the pamphlet. Maybe that's
what. The t-shirts. I love the t-shirts. That was a great t-shirt. Oh,
which one? The green one or the other one? Okay.
I'm not going to even try. I'm staying out of this.
You guys are counter-revolutionaries. I have nothing to say to you.
So there are those people that say, you know what, I want to contribute, but it seems the way politics is, you only look at those that can hand out T-shirts or hand out pamphlets, and I want to contribute intellectually. And for me, it's to create that space for people to align their passion, you know, into party politics, but with the ultimate objective that one day some of you guys will get into parliament and they'll get into legislatures. Because if we get the wrong people, Rory and Andrew, if we get the wrong kind of people into legislatures, into parliament and so forth, then all the other things are meaningless, you know. It will just be wasteful effort. Because the people that will actually write the laws, the policies, approve policies, implement policies, are outside the system. So we'll be back to where we are, you know, that you'll be reduced as a political player to painting schools and crutches. Important as it is, it's not the end in itself. For me, the end is to be able to transform the kind of a political leader that we have in this country. So we have an opportunity now to try to change that, you know, and yeah.
Honorable Ghana, we've got a few people who are saying a few things on those social media that you love so much. Someone asked, Bradley Shaw asked, what do you think about the maturity being shown by the young lions like Juju and Ndlozi, and where to from there? I mean, they're 80s babies as well. What do you think about them?
I think I might not always agree with their tactics, ne? So it's not my kind of tactic that I'll use, so I won't use that kind
this
of
this advertisement
tactic.
Has been brought to you by the DA.
Which advertisement?
carry on, please.
But you know, the positive side, ne, of whatever they did, which I don't agree with, is that it got young people so interested in watching Parliament. I think this afternoon, when Praveen speaks, there will be more people watching, you know, because they want to see. But it, now that people are watching, now the tech needs to change, because we don't want people to watch their representative in parliament only hoping for some drama, for some bouncers to get in, the white shirt coming in and remove members of parliament. That should not be the reason that people watch parliament. Now that we got their attention, then it's time to change the text and move into the substantive element of why we are in parliament, and that is to save the average man on the street and make sure that his or her life gets to be improved and their aspirations are represented in parliament. So that was, I guess, it had its time. I think now the time demands for a particular kind of action. I think it's oversold. It's no longer relevant as a tactic, the way I assess it. I don't think it's relevant to where we are now.
Ghana, let's talk about this action that you speak about. There's obviously action in Parliament, but we have seen that, let's say, the 90s babies have defined their battlefield as the university campuses. We, the 80s babies now, dominate or at least are filled in the corporate space. At least those of us that listen to this show and so on, most of us are in the corporate space, which is largely remains untransformed. And we are actively in there perpetuating that the results of that untransformed environment. Should we not be playing a more militant role in almost a similar vein to what the students are doing, to begin to see true transformation in the spaces that we occupy? The 90s babies are transforming the spaces, or fighting for transformation in the spaces they occupy. Should we not be playing a more active role? Because it seems we're just going along with the untransformed nature of the corporate spaces that we occupy.
I think you have a point on us playing more, but I think the bigger role that we should also be playing, you know, in the corporates that we are in, is to get to open the spaces up, because in many instances, people, once they get to the top, they kick the ladder, so that no one can get to climb to that level, and they remain the few guys that sit around the. That nice round table.
Yeah.
So we need to change that mindset. We need to get to a point when we realize that this thing, it's we haven't arrived until everyone is here. We haven't arrived until everyone's in terms of militants. I don't know. I think people define militants differently. I can't say what's happening in Bramfontein is militancy. It's anarchy. I can't call that militancy, and it's just counterproductive. It's going to work against the very poor students that this thing is done. It's supposedly done on their behalf. So there has to be a definition of what we mean by militancy in the corporate space. I don't want people to be breaking windows and say, no, we are being militant, we want transformation. So I want second that kind of a view, but being steadfast and always keeping the transformation, the diversity of the workplaces, then that's fine. And then the next step is to get to a point where after getting those skills from working at Cliff Central, one day you go and start Rory Central or Andrew, what?
I want us to speak about, because you have very interesting views about the students and yes. what is going on university campuses. And to a large extent, or at least some of the things that have been said, are that the 90s babies are having to fight this battle because the 80s babies turned a blind eye to all of these issues that the 80s babies are fighting against. Is the fight that the 90s babies are putting on legitimate? And what is our role as 80s babies in relation to that fight?
No, the fight is legitimate. The tactics are not. I do not agree with their tactics. in the main. And I think sometimes this analysis for me is wrong. Sometimes when they analyze, I don't believe that higher education should be free for everyone. In fact, those that are supposed to pay, they should pay. I'm a member of parliament. My kids, when they get to varsity, and I'm still a member of parliament, I should pay for them. They shouldn't be this thing that everyone gets to have free education. For those ones like myself who come from a poor background, then yes, the state must assist them. They must assist and make sure that no one is denied higher education on the basis that they don't have money. So on that aspect, I'm not scared to be unpopular. I don't subscribe to free higher education for everyone. I'm clear on that.
Why so not? Those why not, Ghana?
I you see there is the money that goes into education, it has to come from somewhere. There's no this thing that something is for free. Just because you are not paying for it, it doesn't make it free. You know, if I invite you to my party and I provide you with booze and food and so forth, you might interpret it as free booze and free food, but in reality, it's not. And I think we still have other priorities in the country that we can't channel everything only to higher education, and that will find even those that can afford higher education, because we need also to be careful of what we will end up with. You know, some reports over the weekend were quite disturbing, because I've been speaking about this thing, is that when we get to destroy this public higher education, the real beneficiaries, by the way, it will not be poor people. There's a reason why people who stay 3 kilometers from Walter Sisulu University or University of Venda, they don't send their kids there, because those universities were destroyed. And if we destroy everything, then what's going to rise when the fees have fallen everywhere for everyone? What's going to rise is private higher education. And those of so your kids and my kids, Rory, they will not go to these free ones. They will start going to those private ones. And the ones that will get disadvantaged by that movement will be the very poor students that we say we are doing this on their behalf. So we need to balance this. I think poor students deserve quality higher education, and I'm not convinced that the conversation at the moment, or the manner in which this thing is being done, is going to ensure that there's quality education for the poor and for everyone. It's just going to collapse the public higher education, and the private higher education is going to rise, and then the poor people will be worse off than they are.
As the argument might be made that, yeah, fine, it's easy for you as an 80s baby to point fingers at 90s babies who are trying to do something. About something that we as a generation failed to do. You went to varsity, I went to varsity, and we certainly didn't put up as big a fight. That, you know, we weren't even at a stage where those that can afford should pay when we were in varsity. It wasn't even at that stage. Through their efforts, they haven't achieved an entire scrapping of fees, but we are now at a stage where government is speaking quite seriously about, okay, those that can pay must pay. Is it our fault as a generation? And where do we then position ourselves as 80s babies in relation to the struggle that continues? How do we participate? Should we just stand back and watch the 90s babies do it for us? Have we failed them?
No, I don't believe so. I think there's a perception out there that the fees or the battle for fee increment is just starting now. That because UCT and VETS are doing it, you know. I went to the University of the North, and in my first or my second week at varsity, there was a massive shutdown of the varsity around a 7% fee increment. So people now are talking about this thing because now it's veterinarianity. We ask anyone that has been, that has gone to Teflop, that has gone to Deben Westville, TUT. This fight has been going on. Maybe we didn't ban cars and police cars and buses like now it's being done, that people think the battle around exclusion, financial and academic exclusion, is starting. No, it's not starting. It's been ongoing for many years. And there are many victories that the 80s generation won insofar as access to higher education is concerned. And the increase, especially on the state assistance, was mainly driven by the 80s generation. You know, when TEFSA was introduced, it was just covering a small portion, and over time it has increased to where it is now. And we must not for a moment think that the 80s generation just went to varsity and from the 23rd or the 24th of January until the 10th of December, everything was fine in those universities. Yes, things were fine at VETS and UCT. Mm. But if you went to the historical black institutions, anyone that went there will tell you that what these guys are doing, it's similar to what was done in the late 90s, early 2000s. So we must just be careful not to characterize the 80s generation, the late 70s, 80s generation as passive student activists. It will be a wrong characterization.
We've been speaking to Magashule Gana from the DA. He is the Shadow Minister for the Human Settlements Ministry. Honourable Gana, as we wrap up here, just a very, very quick and last question around people who don't want to get into politics, don't want to take up political positions, but do want to make a difference in South Africa, specifically these 80s babies. What would your suggestion be?
Yeah, obviously, you see, for democracy to function well, we do need a very strong civil society, you know, civil society organization. So if people cannot stomach the good things of politics, because politics is very good, it's very good. Nothing compares to politics. It's very, very good. If they can't stomach the good things of politics, then maybe they can get involved in civil society. That's very key, because civil society also helps in keeping us politicians in check. You know, so that's another avenue that people can do. And civil society also extends to the business world. So people can do their part there. But obviously, as someone that has observed politics and politicians, I do think we can do well by having some of the brilliant minds. I mean, I meet brilliant people, brilliant young people. Like, why are you, Chief, why are you not in politics? You guys should be there, and me, I should be, you know, supporting you guys, because your minds are so brilliant. But I can help you, so I can help others build a strong backbone, you know, a strong, because it needs to be strong. I mean, those little knives must not penetrate.
Yeah.
So it's important. So you must not lie to people and say, because the food is good, it doesn't mean that the preparation of that food, you don't sweat in preparing the food.
Yeah,
it takes a bit of sitting, so we need to be honest in our conversation. But once the food is prepared, the political food tastes so nice.
Everybody gets to eat.
We need to give it to the people that haven't eaten.
Yeah,
and that is the majority of South Africans. So Rory, there's a task for you. Let's help build a South Africa that it's going to ensure that everyone can enjoy the fruits of our freedom. And that's why I'm in politics.
Nicely put. Well, thank you very much, Honorable Ghana. For the first time, I think I have agreed with most of what the DA activist has said. So thank you very much for taking your time out. We know that you're busy preparing yourself for important things in your life. So thank you so much for taking the time out, Ghana. And we look forward to having you on again.
Anytime. I'm always available to interact with young people that are contributing in some ways to the political discourse of this country. Just that they don't know, but I look forward to interacting with you. And who knows, one day you might actually be back and be on the front line.
In a blue shirt.
Let's not take it that far. Thank you very much, Ghana. Well, that's been us, 80s babies, having a discussion around our role in making our mark on the South Africa's political history. If you missed it, catch the podcast, or if you want to speak to somebody who's missed it. If you're listening to this, you didn't miss it, obviously. Catch the podcast on cliffcentral.com. As for us, we're out of here.
Ciao, ciao. Have a lovely week. We'll see you again next week. Cliffcentral.com.